Okay, 60 seconds with Ray Smiling starting now. Best restaurant in New York.
Oh, hell, dude, I wasn't prepared for this. You can ask me questions about advertising. I'm not past.
Okay, fine.
Most frustrating app on your phone.
Instagram.
Best campaign you've seen in the last 3 months.
Oh, dude, come on, you guys gotta just ask me about something less revealing, like sexual experiences or something.
Okay, okay. That's actually my second one. Best sexual experience you've had this week. What's your favorite brand right now?
Favorite brand? I don't.
These are breaking people's brains. These
I know.
Maybe we should.
I don't have it. Like,
hit him with the rat fish.
It's not even on here. Do I look like a rat or a fish?
You're giving me fish energy.
Oh, okay. Cool.
That's sweet.
A lot of Ray vibes because of the Ray talk behind.
That was
No. I feel like rats are a little bit more mischievous and fish are more delightfully naive, unaware. So if I had to go on that one, do I think you're going to steal my wallet or get confused by something shiny? I'd go with getting confused by something shiny.
Thank you.
If those are the only two options.
I think you should get that on your LinkedIn.
Yeah, I think I should.
Gets confused by things that
are
shiny.
What does Ollie look like? A rat or a fish?
I'm not going to prime you, actually. I'm just going to...
I'm going to go more rat because you just immediately smized at me.
I did.
You did. Oh, and so I'm like, you try to fuck with me, you might steal my wallet. Yeah.
So a rat steals wallets and a fish just sort of bumps into things and looks at shiny stuff.
Yeah. Like goldfish, they don't have memory or something. Like it's a couple of seconds, So
Hey, you are actually a goldfish.
Thank you.
Ray, thanks for joining us today, by the way, mate.
That's it. All right.
That was it. We just wanted to cover that. So I guess we normally start with a question around talent. I think we should stick with that question.
Yeah.
With who was the first person that made you feel like you were talented?
Who's the first person? I would probably say I had a teacher in high school for a elective class in semantics. And he would constantly... Well, I was in high school, so I was kind of a shit. So I would constantly challenge him, and he would come back at me aggressively. And these were just debates on literature and words and ideas. But he would come back at me aggressively, and somehow I think that made me feel like I was smart because it wasn't he could just immediately dismiss me.
Yeah,
it was and he had to reckon with me, and I was it's kind of if. You make LeBron sweat. You're well, I'm doing something there, right? You know what I mean?
Was that your thing then? So were you, was it English and writing that was your kind of, your superpower at school?
It took me a while to figure it out. I wanted to do science initially when I was in high school, because I just liked science and how the world works. But I was better at English, but I was I don't know what the hell you do with English.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like financially, when you're 17, you're I can, if I want to be a scientist, you can make money as a scientist. I was what am I, be a poet? Yeah. Just be the guy in the subway who's I will write you a poem for $5. Yeah. So
when did the penny drop then that you could actually become a writer?
It took a hot minute. I during the early 2000s, when it was the blog sort of era, when blogs really dominated culture.
People read them.
Yeah, people read them, and people would read long blogs on absolutely nothing. That was kind of where I was I might be able to, I could do this. And I spent a lot of time doing it, not making any money, but it was at least, again, you felt talented. You felt people are reading this and people oh shit, you can write.
What were you writing about?
Music a lot. I was writing 1,000, 1,500, 2,000 word blog posts about rap mixtapes because I was you guys don't get it. You don't really understand the genius of riff raff, so yeah, that was my sort of thing.
Okay. And how does that then convert into writing ads?
Well, I would say, like I said, I didn't go to college for writing. I didn't go to ad school or anything. But I did for a while run a blog, and that blog put up 8 posts a day. And sometimes I would have people, I had writers submitting, but on a day there might be like no one sent anything. So it was like, okay, crank out 8 articles, you know, that are like maybe 2-500 words a piece. So you do that enough and you get the like writing muscle really strong. But I was also writing their copy for like when you would go to the blog was for a streetwear company.
Oh, cool.
And so like if you went to like whatever t-shirt, you know, and it has a little write up, I was the one who was writing it. And so like that's how I got into like writing very short, succinct, pithy, weird sort of copy. And from there, that's where I went into advertising, because I was like, in advertising, you do the same thing, but like you actually get paid money instead of getting free t-shirts.
So did you just hear about it then? Or did like somebody like...
No, I actively was trying to get into it. Okay, I'm jumping around in time, but before that, I worked for a video game company, Rockstar Games, that makes Grand Theft Auto and Red Dead Redemption and stuff. And like we would work with advertising agencies on occasion. I was like, these dudes, all they do is like come up with an idea, but they don't actually have to do it. But I was like pixel pushing it. So I was like, this is like the easier thing is to just be like, what if we did this? Hey, you guys make it. And so I was like, again, I think I could do that and make more money and do less work. So,
you were designing, essentially you were like a designer.
I was a designer at Rockstar for like banners and websites and all that sort of stuff. But then like for fun, I was also doing like music journalism on the side. Then I went to the streetwear company and I was doing all journal, like writing blog shit and doing like their copywriting for the stuff, for the web pages. But then I was also doing their like lookbooks and videos and stuff, because I was like interested in directing and like creative direction and like being able to be like, this idea is me.
So what was the first account that you worked on then? I'd love to know when an agency hired you. They're like, okay, you're gonna be right for this.
Beats by Dre. Yeah.
Okay.
And it was at RGA in LA. They had a shop there that was called Hustle that was just to service Beats by Dre.
Wow.
And they brought me out basically because the stuff I was doing at the streetwear company, I think when I interviewed with them, they were like, yeah, this stuff is really cool. And I was like, yeah, like I did that photo shoot and video for $2,000. And they were like,
don't tell Dre that.
right. And so I think the math in their head was pretty clear. They were like, hey, if this kid can do this with like random, you know, like a random sort of assortment of people, like really fast, then like with more resources, you could do more, you know? And so like, I would do things like I shot some social stuff for them. I remember one time and literally just loaded up the trunk of my car with Beats by Dre like stuff, like headphones and speakers, and would just like go and contact people who did like aerial yoga. You know what I mean? And be like, yo, do your little your thing. We're going to film you. Here's a bunch of shit. See you later. Yeah. And that was cool. But like that sort of like running gun social content stuff, that was what they first hired me for. But then they realized I could write regular scripts too and do stuff like that.
Wow. Were you always like typecast to work on cool things?
Yeah. Ever since I've been in advertising, it's always been on cool things. And to be fair, when it has not been on cool things, I generally am like, I don't want to do this.
Really?
Yeah.
So if I was like, I've got some laundry detergent that I need you to flog, how would you approach that?
Here's the thing. If the laundry detergent, if that brand was open to doing something cool, let's do it. Let's rock. I actually think that would be an interesting challenge. But if that laundry detergent just wants like, I'm a happy mom, and sometimes I have stains that just won't come out, so I use X brand, blah, 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 then I'm like, absolutely not. Because like, I don't know, why are you hiring me to do this? And like, what am I bringing to it?
Yeah.
Like, this is just a bad marriage on both ends of it, except for money.
Yeah.
How do you bullshit detect then? Because I can imagine a lot of brands will say to you, we want to do a cool thing. How do you snipe out if they're just kind of lying?
One, what have you done before? You know what I mean? So it's like, obviously Old Spice is deodorant. You know what I mean? But like, you look at their stuff and you're like, okay, you're going to be down the clown, you know? And two, if it's like, no, we're starting over from scratch and like Tide is going to be wild now. We're going to do crazy stuff. It's sort of like asking them like, well, what are you influenced by? Like why do you want to do weird stuff? Mm, like, yeah. Is there a business reason why you want to do weird stuff? And like, the people, did you hire the dude from Old Spice? Okay, cool. Then I get, you know, like, you actually might be down to do, you know, weird stuff. But if the person, the CCO, if this lady, all she's ever done is happy mom stuff or just like car commercials, then I'm like, you probably actually don't want to do weird stuff. And this is going to be an awful experience.
Do you ever see that? Do you ever see like all people time. Like abusing culture in an ad that it shouldn't belong in there?
Oh, all the time. That's, I mean, like, I think it's sort of like it started off with like diversity plays,
right?
Where it's just like, we'll just stick a black person, a gay person, a Spanish person. And it's like, we'll just have the Spanish person say something in Spanish. That's it. We did it. You know what I mean? Where you're not like interrogating culture and norms and like, how does Christmas look different if you are Middle Eastern and you're Middle Eastern and Christian, but like, how do your Christmas traditions differ than if you're from the Midwest, you know, or if you're black or if you're Latino, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that's when you actually get cool work, let alone if you're a skater or whatever the fuck, you know. But a lot of people just slam shit together and think that they've made something. Yeah, like, yeah. I did it. We won, you know?
Yeah. And it's almost lack of, I guess, just lack of depth in the situation.
Yeah, nuance. Depth and nuance. And usually that comes from the people who are working on it and, like, giving them agency to really, like, you know, push back on the thing and say, yeah, this isn't true or this smells like bullshit.
Just sorry to interrupt you, mate. I just want to know, before we go into like deep depth about culturally relevant work, like, I want to know, when did you realize storytelling is a big part of what you do? Like, when you were working with Beats by Dre, like, when did you become an expert in that and that kind of routine?
I mean, like, the guys I worked under at RGA on Beats, they were real big proponents of like making sure that things were true and that, you know, like, I think that's where I learned, because when I started writing scripts, like, I think like everyone else, when you first start writing scripts, you're just writing, you're recreating ads that you've already seen, you know? And so, you know, you start doing that and they're like, yeah, that's not and so very quickly I was like, okay, cool, I'm just gonna write things that are like very specific to me, you know, and like, hopefully if you understand what the brand is trying to say, your specific thing will still be understandable by someone who didn't experience that specific thing, but they will be the truth of it will still land, you know. And so I think from there, I got, at the same time, kind of got very much interested in like screenwriting. And so started really like diving into like, how does screenwriting work and structure and why is one superhero movie trash and the other one works? And like, watching thousands of hours of YouTube videos and reading all the books I could. And at sort of like doing those things on the same path, you start to understand, even though filmmaking is, ads are still filmmaking. Yeah. It's just the entertainment narrative side is different than ads, but they're using the same tools. And so it's just like, as I was learning one, I was like implementing it in the other.
Wow. I want to know what makes a good story then. So like, when you're looking at that research that you figured out and it was like, why did this comic or this like
whatever
Marvel, movie. Whatever do well and that one didn't? What's a common trend?
I think the first thing is that you have to be saying something. You have to have like a point of view on the world, right? And that point of view can be profound or it can be mundane, but you have to be be able to articulate what you're trying to say, you know? And if you think about like the shittiest rom-com, they might be saying, you know, hey, don't work so hard, allow love into your life. Is that the most profound thing ever? No, but like, if that idea is clear for everyone who is making it, then it comes through in all of the details of every decision that character would make in said rom-com, right? And so I think you have your clear thing, you have your truth about how the world works, and then basically on a technical level, you just have to make sure that it is constantly reaffirming that truth and that it is interesting. It is like boredom is your constant enemy. That's the thing you're constantly running away
when you're
from,
telling the story.
When you're telling any story, right? And so it's just you have these turning points. So like if you think about it like this, if you you guys are here and you're doing these podcasts, but you're from England, right? So I imagine at some point one of y'all is going to go out and have a night and see friends, and maybe you might go to a club, maybe you might meet a girl or meet a guy, whatever. I don't know, whatever. Cool, great. So you come back the next day and you're like, yo, you guys, let me tell you what happened last night, right? So I'm trying to go out to the club because I'm like, I got to meet somebody. I got to meet me an American girl. You know, I heard a lot about, and I'm not even going to look at which one of y'all is looking at which one, but I know it's one of y'all. But anyway.
Ian.
But my point is, okay, so you're like, all right, cool. You know, I'm here in New York. I want to meet a New York girl. I didn't see Sex in the City. I'm ready. Boom, let's do it, right? And so you're like, I go to this one club, and they wouldn't let me in because they said my outfit wasn't cool enough. All right, that sucks. All right, cool. So I go to another club, right? And then, you know, when I go to that club, I'm talking to this girl, and she's hot, and I'm loving it. I'm like, boom, we connected. And all of a sudden, her boyfriend comes over. And this dude is like 6'15", and he weighed 300 pounds, and he's just looking at me, and he's like, get out of my face, Harry Potter. And I'm like, you know what? I'm good, and I walk away, right? So listen, I didn't even, like, this story has not concluded, you know.
What happens?
But right, here's the thing. You want to know what happens. Mm. But that's all because in that short story, I established what, you know, what's the goal of the night? Find me an American girl, right? Cool. And then it's like, you go to one club, they won't let you in because your clothes aren't cool. That's a turn. All right. Yeah, so then you find the girl. You go to the next club. You find the girl. She's hot. Okay, cool. Everything's going. Then the boyfriend comes over. That's another turn. And so it's just like keeping a good story is just constantly
turning.
Turning. Yeah. But at the end of it is like the story will end with either, and then so I brought her back to my house and we had a great time, da 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 da. Or I went home. I got a sandwich from the bodega. Chopped cheeses are actually amazing. I get the, you know, I get the hubbub. Didn't find a girl, but bing, bang, boom. You know?
Okay, I want to hear the inverse of that. So what is, that's a good story. Yeah. And I feel engaged about this night that Ian's probably going to have tonight. Right. So, but what would be the reverse of that?
What would be
a bad story?
A bad story would be one where it's like, take the same events. All right, cool. So, you know, like, I'm here in America. I'm trying to find this girl, right? And so I go to this club. It was on, like, 42nd Street. And so it was, like, Midtown. You know, it's not, like, the coolest people, but it's, like, cool enough. I don't know where the cool clubs are. But, like, anyway, so I go to this club, and it's got a super long line. So I'm like, this must be the place. And I go to that club, and I wait on the line. It takes forever. And I finally get to the door, and they're like, oh, your outfit's not cool enough. And I'm like, why is my outfit cool enough? And they're like, because you're just wearing all black. And I'm like, yeah, but black is trendy. It's, like, always in. And they're like, yeah, but we don't want to let you in because, you know, like, it's kind of basic. You kind of basic bitch looking. And I'm like, ah, I hate this place. Fuck you guys. And you walk away. I've used the same amount of words.
But and there's been further
and
the
there's
story.
One turn.
Yeah, yeah.
There's one turn. The only turn was that you got turned away. And that took, I just spent a whole bunch of details that didn't matter on anything. And they didn't reaffirm the point of this story. The point is, does he get the girl? The sort of secondary point is, I was in New York and had a wild night.
Yeah. Wow, you must find some of your friends when they tell stories so annoying.
Yes.
Move on. Where's the term?
Come on, come on. Let's get it. Yeah. Let's get it.
What I don't care if she was wearing a yellow dress. Moving
on. Unless the yellow dress is going to come into play.
On the floor of his room.
On the floor of his room. Or like, you know, I was walking this girl home and then some dude stopped me and they're like, yo, we Latin Kings. She's wearing a dress. You guys be gangbanging. And you're like, absolutely not, sir. But okay, cool. Now that was why you told me she had a yellow dress. Because it was a gang color. You know, like, but yes.
Wow.
So back to ads is that we have even a short amount of time and it's like a lot of times those turns are just like not really considered to my eye. And so it's just like random shit happening for the sake of random shit happening because we kind of have everything has to go fast because you got 60 seconds and you want to get the most, especially if you're making sort of a montage-y spot, you just want the most shit happening.
Yeah.
And so it's just a lot of shit happening that doesn't really again, it's just details. It's on 42nd Street, and the club was shaped like a box, and they had a reindeer out front, and the, and you're like, okay, cool. Why does this matter? Like, what
is that? Yeah. Why I don't engage with that? Because I'm just the story's too quick, and that it didn't have any turns.
It's. I think most people don't engage with ads because they're not particularly entertaining. They're just throwing shit at you. Again, it's a club that has a reindeer in front. What does that have to do with anything? And then also, I think usually the truth of the thing isn't, this is the bigger problem, is generally not very deeply interrogated. And right. So even when you're working with a product, when you're making an ad, the truth isn't generally so much about the world, it's about the product.
Mm.
Or how the product relates to the world. But I feel like generally we don't interrogate those things enough. We accept that, like, you know, we're working on an ad for Clorox bleach, and they're like, Clorox bleach is changing the world through diversity and bringing people together. And you're like, sure.
Is it?
Is it though? You know? Right, and I'm... And I think a lot of times we you get that brief from Clorox and you're like, cool. And then you go off and you just try to find information to support that brief. And then you make work based off of that.
False truth.
That false truth. And you're just like, cool. And you're like, so then you make this thing and it looks pretty and you get the best directors and great actors and we write the best lines that we can. But it's still kind of tepid because as a normal person, you're like, what are you doing?
So that's going back to your stages of like a good story, right? So number one was the truth.
Yes.
And interrogating that truth and making sure that it's not what we want to be the truth.
Yes.
Second thing is turns. Yes. So like, don't just tell me the truth over and over again, even if it is real, make it interesting and turn.
The turns make it interesting. Yeah.
Does it making it untrue make it interesting if I'm like, this is the truth about bleach? Ah, I'm joking. No, it's not. Is that a good still turn?
You can. You can. But then it has to work that whatever you said before you realized the truth kind of has to be in conversation.
Okay.
With the truth.
Yes.
This sounds very...
I'm with you.
So like an M. Night Shyamalan movie, right? Like The Sixth Sense.
Yes.
So it's like it's lying to you before you realize, spoiler for The Sixth Sense, that the kid sees dead people, that Bruce Willis is dead. I know, I fucked it up. I'm sorry. but when you watch The Sixth Sense the second time, you realize that even though it was lying to you in the beginning, it was still telling the truth. It just was...
That's so true.
You get what I'm saying?
It's like that. Oh, it was all a dream. You fucker.
Right.
When it's all a dream, it's like, well, anything could have happened in the dream because it's not real.
Right. But if you do a movie where it's like, it's all a dream, but then you go back and you realize that there were clues and there was the truth of the dream in there the whole time, that's when you're like, I don't feel cheated.
Yeah.
Because the beginning part was talking to the truth of it.
Okay. I've got that. So truth.
Yes.
Terms. What's next?
You make things true, you make things interesting, and that's pretty much, that's all you need for a good story. You know what I mean? Like, you should also make things true in the specific. So, like, if, like I said, rom-com might be like, let love into your heart, don't work so hard, you know, whatever, cool. Mm. That's the truth we're saying about the world, and we're going to have interesting turns and all the things that are going to happen to our main character. But you should also be true as you build the world. So if you're going to have your character is a businesswoman who is, you know, great, cool, and she has friends, you could just give her stock, sassy, gay friend. You could give her stock, sassy, black friend, and you could call it a day, right? And that's what a lot of movies do. But what I'm saying in, like, truth and specific is, like, who is this woman? Would she have a gay friend? Would she have a black friend? That's it. Figure that out.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah, she would have a black friend. She would have a gay friend. Okay, so what is the truth of the gay friend that she would have? Who is that person?
Yeah.
And, like, not just have him be like, yes, queen, da-da-da-da-da, but, like, interrogate and probably get a writer who is gay and, you know, knows that culture and that world and, like, you know, how would that person relate to this woman? What is he like, again, outside of her story, what does he think of her and, like, what's their relationship like and da 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 da. And obviously this is for making longer narrative things, but the same thing plays out when you're making a 60-second ad where it's a family and they're, you know, coming together for Christmas. Oh, the classic, oh, it's a Christmas car ad, and the guy brings the wife out and is like, ta-da, and it's like two cars with a bow on top of it. And so the truth of that in the about the world is that, yes, sometimes you do give people presents.
Yeah.
And especially at Christmas, you give people presents, especially extravagant presents. But the truth of the like specific characters is like, like, how rich do you have to be to buy, like...
Yeah.
An average car twice.
An average car twice. $60,000 on, like, sort of, like, the cheap end of a decent car. You're going to spend, like, $60,000, and you're not... You don't consult with that with your wife. So you just got $60,000, like, in the, like, secret account.
To buy a blue Ford Mondeo.
Right. And that your wife is just going to be like, oh, wow. This is great, and not be like, yo, where do you have $60,000 that I don't know about? Like, we gotta have conversations, bro. Like, and small things like that, even if you've never interrogated.
That'd be such a good ad, by the way. Yeah.
He should definitely make that.
It's for some like financial service. Like,
yeah.
We need to have a discussion, you know.
Talk before buying the blue Ford.
Yeah.
You heard it here.
But I think like people, even if they don't specifically go through that process, they're like, this isn't real.
Yeah.
Like, I can't tell you why, but there's something, this feels fake, this feels like a commercial instead of a reflection of real life.
So who's an amazing, I think we can talk a lot about amazing storytellers in the movie sense, but I want to hear about a great storyteller in a quicker form of content. Who does that bit really well, and why are they better than what is 90% of out there right now?
I find a lot of kids on Instagram and now TikTok, but I'm old, so I filter it through Instagram.
MySpace.
I'm on Facebook real heavy. I get all my content from LinkedIn.
Sorry about that.
I think a lot of kids on social media who do like little skits are like, they're really good at getting the truth and being like very concise, but nailing like a truth. Again, not profound truths, you know, it's still kind of slight diversion. I find it funny that like all of the apps that we have like made for social media have just taken us back several decades in terms of like Twitter just revived like the one-liner.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, and like how like TikTok and then Instagram stories and reels like brought back like physical comedy so much. You know what I mean? Like just like short, like
Charlie man Chaplin gets, on the piano.
Yeah, yeah. Man gets hitting balls with fucking football. Yeah. That's hilarious, you know? But I found a lot of kids who are making the, you know, content that's like a minute or are under are really good at finding like the nugget of truth and then just banging it out. There's that guy on Instagram, Supreme Dreams. He has like a little crew of friends, but they do like these little videos about basketball and about anime and, you know, random shit. But like he got pretty famous off of doing like a spoof of LeBron. And like one, I think one of the ones that particularly was funny was when it was, I don't know how much of a basketball fans you guys are, but when the Nets signed, Durant and James Harden. And so they had Durant, Harden, and Kyrie Irving. And he made a video that was supposed to be LeBron in practice finding out about this. And like it's like LeBron losing his mind because he's like, I'm 36 years old. Like, you can't do this. Like, it's like three of them against me. I'm like, my back hurt, my knees hurt. Like, I just like, and he's just like having a fit. But it's like a minute long.
Well, that's quick.
You know what I mean? And it's just like it immediately gets to the again, what is the truth of that is like, hey, you know, LeBron has been excellent for a mad long time and he's still top 5-10 players in the league, and you need three of the other 5 or 10 players in the league to challenge him, not by himself, but you know what I mean? And like the frustration, you know, boom, it's there. You know what I mean?
But it's like that's short storytelling.
It's short storytelling, you know.
Do we still have time then for longer form ads now? Are people paying attention to
you have to compete with everything else. That's the thing, is that I think advertising, film advertising, let's say, television stuff, we came from a place where you had a captive audience because you were trying to watch your show. It's going to break. It's going to break on a cliffhanger. So you want to know what's happening next, and you got to watch these five ads for whatever. It's a pain in the ass to get up or change the channel. I might miss something. So I'll just sit here and I'll watch this. But now you've lost the captive audience because I can look at my phone or I've DVR'd this and whatever, whatever. You know all the reasons. And so it's like we went from you have a captive audience to you're fighting for attention.
Yeah.
And the thing is that like it's sort of the difference between movies and TV. Movies have a captive audience. So you can start a movie and spend 15 minutes just like hanging out before you get to like, what the fuck is the problem?
Yeah.
What is going to happen? Because you paid your money, you sat down, you're going to see this through. Unless the movie is fucking awful, you're going to sit here and watch this, right?
Yeah.
But TV works on the opposite assumption. It's like, no, you could always change the channel. So it's like, hey, this just started. Boom, a guy got shot in the head. A dog walks in and he's like, yo, who shot that dude in the head? Okay, cool. Let's go, right? And so, you know, it's like we have to get more like
TV
in that regard of like, hey, fight for their attention, you know? And whenever I speak to junior people or people like in college, I'm like, I just imagine whenever I'm writing a script that like as soon as I start, you press play on this ad or it just started, that the person's fingers just drifting over to the closed window thing. And I feel like it takes like 6 seconds.
Mm. Yeah.
To like bring them back. And so I'm just constantly working in like a 6 second cycle in my head of like, did something happen to bring you back?
Wow.
You know what I mean? And so that's something in an ad could be a fucking explosion, you know, or it could be, you know, you open the box and there's a puppy and the little girl is like, oh my God, you know, but like, that's a thing that makes you like feel something. So you're like, okay, I'm going to stop drifting my finger over and I'm gonna see where this goes. And I think a lot of things is that once someone knows what is happening, they have the option to check out. But if they don't, and again, this is why you have the turns, if they don't know exactly what's gonna happen, then they're kind of frozen in place.
Yeah.
And so that's the TV-ness of it, make it more interesting.
Whoa. And do you think, okay, so that is, I'm learning, by the way, this is, I've never learned so much about stories in my life. I'm like, wow, I'm really into this. Yeah. By the way, Ray, I didn't tell you, but we actually have a secret fan in the corner of the room there, Mr. Ian McKenzie. So when we said we were having you on the podcast, Ian went, fucking hell, that is really bizarre. I've definitely bought that man's course.
Oh,
and so
cool.
What, awesome. You made a course, right? Yeah, yeah. And so I want to know, what was that course about and how did you kind of, why did you do it? Where did that come from?
Yeah, I did a course on Domestika, and it's about storytelling in creative direction, or seeing creative direction as a form of storytelling. And it was just like an attempt to like codify like a lot of the things that like I know about creative direction and like how to make good work, and that people who work at like really big agencies, you know it, but it's really hard to explain.
Yeah.
Because it's just like, how do you explain riding a bicycle? Like, you just know how to do it, you know? And like, I've never taught a kid to ride a bicycle, but I'm sure it's really hard because you're just like, just don't fall over, dude. Like,
just you pedal, know? Pedal.
Just pedal and you'll keep going. Yeah. But like, it for me, it took quite a bit to just like interrogate all the steps and break it down into something where it's like, you know, every agency is like, oh, you have your idea, your insight, your idea, and your execution. Mm. And it's like define what an insight is.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, you, like we all feel it, but to define it in words, you're like how do you actually explain it? So it was just like trying to break those things down so that it's like, as you're trying to make work, you can be like, I have this insight, and I'm like, actually, it's not an insight. Because, like, to me, I define an insight as something that is both true but surprising, right? And so it's like, a lot of times you run an insight, and it's true, but it's not really surprising, and thus it's not insightful.
Yeah.
It's just men are largely, generally bigger than women. Cool. What am I going to do with that? Like, how am I going to make any work off of that, you know what I mean? Like But once you add a surprising twist to it, now you've got a tension. You've got something to make it interesting because now you're fighting against generally accepted reality versus your take on reality.
Why did storytelling become quite a bland term? Why did everyone suddenly use it, do you think?
I think because people just think it's like making a 3-minute video.
Right.
You know what I mean? Or like connecting your billboard to your video and being like, we're telling a great story about our brand and this, that, the other. And it's like, yeah, you made a campaign. I don't know what the actual story you're like, again, like, yeah. All right, if it's a story, like, what's the truth you're saying about your brand?
Mm.
You know, and like, is that coming? Again, I talked about it a lot in like filmic terms, but it's the same fucking thing when you think about it in a campaign. It's like, all right, what's the truth about the brand? What are we saying? Like, we stand for this, or our product is great because of that. Cool. All right. And then, so that's the overall truth about the world. And then in the same way, we're like, interrogate, who is this lady's friends? Who, you know, does the gay character speak in a way that we're just a yes girl cliche, or do they speak in a more authentic way?
Yeah.
And I think you can apply that in the same way. So it's like, if you're saying, oh, we're Apple computers and we're all about creativity. Okay, cool. That is your truth about the world. But then if, if Apple decided to take off all of the Apple comes with GarageBand. If for whatever reason they were like, we're taking GarageBand out. All right, in the specific, you're not really living up to the truth. You know what I mean? Yeah. Or if all your Apple commercials look exactly the same, it'll be very uniform, but it won't really hold to the truth of creativity. Like, it's just making sure all these things like actually ladder up to. Yeah. Your truth, yeah. And then making it have turns so that it's like, does the billboard do something different and more interesting than when you saw the commercial? Or did once you saw the commercial on TV, you know exactly what the billboard's gonna be?
Hmm. I'm curious, who's the best storyteller that you've ever worked with throughout your career?
I would say David Droga was really... he had really great instincts for storytelling. And for someone who has their name on the fucking building and has all the awards and accolades, gave a lot of space for other people to have the, to fill in the authentic things, you know? Like, I remember we were working on something for Under Armour. And I wanted to use a song by a like an electronic artist that was largely like just like the sound of a voice sort of like vibrating through. It's very ambient.
Yeah.
But it's an Under Armour commercial with people like fucking working out. And like I brought him an option that was that. I brought him an option that was like a UK grime artist. And I brought him an option that was like an old-timey sort of soul song. I didn't like that version, but whatever. But so you had those three. And he watched all three and he listened to them. And he was like, he's like, I get the soul version. Totally works. We know, like, Nike has done that 8 million times, but it works. That thing works. When you add emotional music to people working out, people feel things. Cool. He was like, I get the grime artist because it's rap, it's hip hop,
yeah,
adds energy, but his voice is different, so it makes it a little unexpected. And he's like, the woman just sort of, he's like, I don't get it, but it works. And if you, and he's like, he was able to separate his, you know, personal, like, yeah. Not for me.
He's like, yeah.
Yeah, but like, he's like, I get how this adds to the story that you're telling. Cause it made the people working out feel you focused on them more because it wasn't just like screaming at you,
yeah,
energy, 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 go. It's so kind of cool. Languid, and you're just like, and that campaign was about injuries. It was like how like every athlete has specific injuries to them,
right?
And that how that links everyone. If you're, you know, a dad who goes out and runs 2 miles once a week, you've got like weird calluses on your feet.
Right. Okay.
But if you're, you know, a ballerina, you've got totally mangled feet. And if you're a boxer, you've got a weird shoulder thing, but we all got something, you know what I mean? Because nice. Once you start using your body, and like by having this song that was more ethereal, you kind of focused in on like the pain of these people.
I want to hear you speak about more about work. What kind of is there a piece of work out there that defines you, or that you're like, wow, that was a slog, but we got it out, and I'm really proud of it?
I did something for Adidas Originals during the pandemic, right after it, and it was for a pair of sneakers called the ZX. ZX, as we would say in America.
Thank you for that.
and it was interesting because the sneaker, when they showed it to us, they were like, we want to sell a lot of these sneakers, like to like every kid in the mall. These are not hype beastie, you know, Pharrell type joints. These are just like middle road, but we want to sell a bunch of them. And we're like, okay, cool. And they show us the sneakers and they look kind of middle of the road, you know. And I'm like, all right, cool. There's nothing specifically interesting about it.
On purpose.
Like, all right. The only thing that was interesting was that the heel of it was like made out of this like bubble, like kind of bubbly material. Like you could stand on it fine, but it kind of just like the way it looked. Everyone who came across it would come up and like squeeze it like a stress toy, because it just looked like rubbery, you know. And so me and my partner McLean and the team that we're working with, we just sat there and we tried, like, we were just brainstorming. We're like, we could say this about it, we could say that about it, but all of it was just like not fucking true. You were just making shit up to trying to elevate this middle of the road sneaker. But when we late at night, we're like sitting there just mushing the sneaker around, we're like, you know, like it's like weirdly satisfying to just like mush this thing and play with it. And someone was like, yeah, it's like those oddly satisfying videos on Reddit.
Yeah.
And we were like, oh yeah. Like, you know, the videos are like someone just like painting a wall or like one thing that perfectly fits into another thing and like all of this. And so we were like, what if this whole campaign was about how this shoe is oddly satisfying, and everything we made for it was oddly satisfying. And so we're like, okay, cool. And so we're like, let's find every sort of person who makes oddly sat, like, what are like the category, like how does oddly satisfying shit work? And so I went on Reddit and I went through every post that I could find in oddly satisfying, and I started kind of made a matrix of like what connects, like what are the categories of it. And it was like, one is about physics, you know, like where it was like things that like things fitting into another thing that feels oddly satisfying. Or like there was another one that was like process, watching people make things or do things feels oddly satisfying. So we like created this matrix. Then we went out and found people on the internet who were on YouTube or Instagram or whatever who were doing those sort of things. And then we gave we sent them the shoes and we sent them money, and we were like, make a thing for us that is in your milieu, but, you know, uses the shoe. And so like we had a guy who squeezed it in a hydraulic press, the shoe, like he put the shoe on like a fake foot and then would like, what happens when you squish orange? What happens when you squish like jelly beans? Cool. And so we got content from him. We got all this content, and then we put it together in a sort of like early MTV style TV station on YouTube. And like the thought behind that was that like early MTV was like wildly chaotic, you know, where it would be like, here's a video, here's another video, here's a 15 second bumper, here's like a 20 minute long episode of The Real World, here's a Godzilla movie because we've run out of stuff to show you. And the Godzilla movie costs $5 to license. And so we were like, but that sort of chaotic programming where you don't know if the next thing coming is 3 minutes long, 15 seconds long, two yeah. minutes long, or 20 minutes long is like, creates turns.
Yeah.
Right? So that keeps you interested, but each piece of thing individually is very soothing. Mm. So if you're soothed, but chaotically, it kind of lulls you into like a hypnotic sort of, I could watch this for a while.
Yeah.
You know? And so we made that during the pandemic. We started the idea before the pandemic, and then during the pandemic, we made it. And it was wildly successful, as far as we know.
Did it sell shoes?
It sold a lot of shoes, yeah.
Right.
And it was also like very smart business-wise because it was tailor-made for like slicing up content.
Yeah.
Because you could just take the shoe squishing the orange
yeah.
logo. The shoe was in frame the whole time, you know. Like,
love that.
That's really cool.
Boom, you know. But that was that's one of the things that I think really is like a Ray sort of thing, you know, where I'm like, oh, I got to use very niche things, you know, like the guy, there's a guy who just blows shit up in slow motion. It's like a dude like somewhere in like Russia and literally just blows shit up
in slow motion.
In slow motion, like 4K.
It's like the slow-mo guy. It's
yeah, slow-mo it, like guys, he literally yeah. just puts explosives in things, bunch of 4K cameras, and you just watch it explode.
Wow.
And we're
it's,
like,
it's satisfying to watch.
Yeah, that sounds fun. And like
we're like, yeah, you're like, here's a shoe, you know.
blow that up.
blow it up, you know. But we got like, you know, but being able to be like, hey, let's use the shoe guy, and then let's use this animator, and then let's use this lady who does like nail art, and put all of that together. But it still worked and still was able to be cut up and do. I was like, that's. Just that's what we're looking for.
On the sale thing, because I think we spoke quite a lot about revenue and reputation and that kind of stuff. Have you ever had it when the financial demand of the ad working gets in the way of a good story?
I think that's the rub of advertising, is that like that's what you have to consider. Yeah. We're not making TV shows, we're not making movies where it's just like the story trumps everything. At the end of the day, we're still selling stuff. But I think if the clients have trust in you, then it's like you can take that into account in the very beginning, and you can figure out a way to tell a dope story but still make it financially feasible. We'll use content from a bunch of different people so we can slice it up. Cool, great. But I think the worst thing is when you come up with an idea and you're like, this will work because of reasons, and then the client gets scared, and then they start slicing up the thing that was not meant to be sliced up. This one piece was supposed to be the 3-minute thing that has to be 3 minutes, but no, we're going to slice it up, and now it doesn't make any fucking sense. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Have you ever told a bad story? Like, obviously, this is a muscle you've been working on for a long time. Have you ever told a bad story? Or a story badly?
Oh, of course. But I think it's like a... It's not like riding a bike. It's you keep refining it every day. You try to get better at it. I've definitely made things that I'm like, there was probably a better way to do that. That didn't quite land. But
is there anything that you still think you're a little bit shit at?
In terms of storytelling, no, or just anything. Oh, in life, I'm shit at a lot of things in life. but let's not go into my therapist territory. as far as like in advertising and storytelling, I'm not necessarily... I very much focus on film and the like brand idea when it gets down to like experiential stuff isn't necessarily my strong point. You know, like I've done a couple of experiential things and I think they're good, but it's... I got to really twist my brain around and be like, I think this works, hopefully.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is kind of a story, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't know the rules of this medium as well.
So I want to know what's next for you, because you've done, speaking of turns, you've moved into lots of different agencies. Mm-hmm. Like, you've been in LA, New York. I want to ask two questions here. One, which is, what is the difference between LA creative advertising scene and New York? And then the next I want to kind of ask about what's next. Let's start there.
Yeah, I think the difference between LA and New York is New York is because it's just a such a more of a concentration of agencies. It tends to be more, and I think just the nature of New York, more driven and more like pressure on people.
Your legs shaking as you're saying.
Yeah, my PTSD. Yeah. While LA, I think, you know, you can have the same level of clients. You can have all those like Silicon Valley, you know, Facebooks, Apples, all those, which still very big, you know, but people seem to be like just like a touch more chill.
Right.
Just like a little bit less
now
manic, you know, and like it's let's schedule a meeting at 11 p.m., you know, like a little less of that. Or, you know, I think people on the West Coast kind of respect the idea that you have a life and that you have like an interest outside of work. And so, you know, if you're like, yo, I did the thing that I got to do, I'm a head out because I'm going to this kayaking class. People are like, word, are you taking that with Danny? Yeah, he's a motherfucker. He gonna get you, you know. Whereas in New York, it's like it's 8 p.m. I'm gonna go home to my family now, and people are like, half day, nice. And obviously, like I'm being hyperbolic.
Of course,
But yeah, I would say that.
Is there anything that frustrates you? Actually, what frustrates you the most about Adland in general, not just in New York or LA?
The metaverse shit is not real. It feels like fetch. Like, it's not going to happen. And listen, maybe in 5 years I will come to, like, eat my words on this. I don't, like, people are pretending like the metaverse is, like, the Matrix. Like, and it's Roblox, dude. It's, like,
do you get in every conversation that you have with, like, a client?
There was a hot minute there where it was, like, everything was metaverse, NFTs. Metaverse, NFTs. I think
why?
Because there's money to be made, and everyone wants to be first on the thing. You don't want to be the last person who signed up for Facebook, you know, like or MySpace, you know.
Still on that, man.
Still there. We
gotta bring
it back.
Blogging, aren't you?
Yeah. I got a secret live journal. No, as you know, people. There's money to be made, and it's like everyone's like, oh, if you can. Who's going to be the one who cracks it and figures out how to get millions of people to buy an NFT? You know, I just don't see the utility in it. In like certain situations, Fortnite, you buy a skin for your character. Mm. That's an NFT. That totally makes fucking sense. You know, and millions of kids are spending millions of dollars on little outfits for their guy, make them look like John Wick or whatever.
Yeah.
But I don't know necessarily what that has to do with the gap.
I think it's funny, that's the third time it's come up so far in these conversations. And that's from some of the most creatively minded people. It was weird when Web3 came around and you started hearing about this, the tech guys were going, why are you waiting until you see what happens when the creative industry gets hold of this? There's going to be so much cool creative stuff. And it's kind of bounced into Adland and the creative industry, and people look on, feels kind of fake.
because for most uses, I just don't see what the actual utility is, you know. Yeah. And like, again, if I think about it as like a normal person, if you're selling this, if you're trying to explain this to your dad or your mom or whatever, are they gonna be like, okay, cool, I could get that? Or are they gonna be like, why the fuck would I? Why
it
would
feels
I spend?
Like, it'll just be an evolution of technology rather than like a place or a destination.
Yes,
it's an evolution. Like Roblox is an evolution of Sims or whatever.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, cool. I won't spend too much on the metaverse. I want to know about why you're leaving Adland for a hot minute, as you would say, sir. Or are you leaving Adland?
I'm still doing commercials. I'm directing commercials. Directing is more interesting to me now than creative direction.
Why?
I think for two reasons. One, I'm just more, like I said, I'm driven, and as this conversation shown, I'm driven very much by like film and TV, and like that's how my mind thinks in terms of creating stories. And second, I've been a creative director for about 6 or 7 years. I don't know, somewhere around there in the math. And I kind of liken creative direction to like long-term dating or being married. And I feel like maybe I'm much better at like dating. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like a wild admission to make, but I think like maybe I'm a fuckboy, you know? Like in the creative sense.
You're the fuckboy director.
No, I'm just saying like that's the nature of directing, is that you show up for 3 weeks and you're like, okay, they're like, hey, we've got this idea, and you're like, yo, this is dope. I see the vision.
Yeah.
I want to add this, that, the other to it. You do it, you shoot for a day or 2 days or 3 days, and then you're like, all right, guys, that was great.
See ya.
Add me on fucking Instagram. What's up? Hit me up again if you want to do it again. And it's cool.
I fucking love that.
You know, like, it's just, I don't want
that makes sense. I'm going to prod you even harder on this because the question I want to evolve out of that knowledge that I know now about why you're doing fuckboy directing. What would you say to a junior creative now coming in? Would you say go on the same journey that I went, learn the commerciality of advertising, and then go into more of a long form directing thing, or would you skip it? What would you say to that person?
I think first of all, it depend on you're assuming that the person is like, I want to do exactly.
No, they're just a creative person. Their name is Wilkinson.
I think you got to figure out where your interest and your predilections meet. You know what I mean? Like. Maybe for someone else, it might be experiential stuff. Maybe for someone else, you know, it might be being in-house at a brand and being like, Nike, I get it. I align with it. And I'm going to grow Nike soccer or whatever. It's like, I got ideas, bro. And like, I just want to be part of the army and just like do the thing. That's cool. I'm just saying for me, that wasn't specifically the thing. Like, there's a certain point where I get like antsy and sort of like I see the you know, a brand is a giant machine, and I'm like, I see the limits of this machine,
right?
And it starts to box me in, and I get weird about like the answer to me is to do this thing, but that's outside the boundaries of of this box,
and that's never gonna change.
And that's never gonna change. I cannot change this machine, you know. Whereas I might go to Adidas. And that's totally within their, that same thing is totally within their box. All right, so cool, you know, so.
I guess promiscuousness can lead to more diversity of creative.
Sure, yeah.
But that's true. And I don't know, you hear of amazing things, like his name, Greg Hoffman, the guy that was at Nike for that whole time, but he was the CMO of that business and took it, like, that's the army, you know, Ranger ending up being the colonel. What's the top of an art? I don't know. That's a weird analogy, but there we are.
Yeah, I get what
you're wearing
saying.
Camo. Yeah. It's gone in my head. But that works, right? If for certain types of people.
Yeah.
I think the variety, most people will enjoy more variety, I think. And it makes sense to move on when you can see the end of the road.
Yeah.
In terms of your creativity and opportunity, I guess, stopping, which it feels like you've been very good at in your career to go.
I would say the advice I would definitely give to younger people is like, to definitely jump around, like, just because you want to understand how, like, but the best way to get good fast is to see how a lot of different people solve the same problem.
Yeah.
Right. And so, like, if you are at Droga 5, even if you're working with David Droga every fucking day, you will only get his way of solving a problem. And clearly that way works. But maybe if you go to Johannes Leonardo and you work with Jan and Leo and you see their way of solving the same problem, maybe that way is maybe a little bit more attuned to your natural inclinations. And like, now you can mix the two and figure out your specific thing.
Yeah.
And so clearly if you can do that with 5 different people, your toolbox, your skill set becomes even better.
How long would a junior have to stay in one of those roles? Because if they're like jumping around every couple of months.
Oh, it's not every couple of months. I mean, let's not be crazy.
They're not directors.
They're not fuckboys.
I think you kind of got to, you suss it out in terms of like, when do you feel like you understand the thinking, the process, and on a purely practical side, do you have something from that time that you can show in your book that proves that you've absorbed the thing from that place, you know?
I'm with
you.
That's
brilliant.
I have to say, by the way, this has been one of the most enjoyable podcasts I've recorded. I feel like I've learned so much. I want to ask a question about your elephant in the room. I know we've covered the metaverse, so that is now a redundant elephant, unless you want to go further on that shit, right? So we asked you to bring along something that makes you either want to puke or that needs to be spoken about within the creative industry in general. Yeah. Is there anything out there that we've not spoken about that you feel like we should?
The thing that I was originally going to say was for people in ads to stop making ads that are just references to other ads. To just like actually focus on real life. But I think I've kind of covered that. Did you guys see the rehearsal by the Nathan Fielder show?
No. What's this?
Did that?
This guy has.
Maybe it has. Has it not come out in England, maybe?
I don't know.
The rehearsal?
No. Okay, wow. All right, I'm about to fuck y'all up. All right, so you know Nathan Fielder who did Nathan For You? That no? Oh,
yeah. Bennett does. Only, Bennett, do you want to swap places?
Okay, so he made this show that was on Comedy Central where he was like helping people with small businesses solve their business problems, but it was like always the most absurd, ridiculous, borderline, disturbing ways of solving their problems.
Like blowing shit up in Russia kind of thing.
I mean, yeah.
Really?
Like, there was like... Yes, there was one where he went to ice cream shop that had trouble with traffic, so he made a flavor that tasted like shit and advertised it, and so people came to taste the shit ice cream, and then when they ate the shit ice cream, they're like, this tastes like shit, but then they would buy regular ice cream to like clear their palate.
Wow, that's smart.
Genius.
Yeah, I would say, listen, if you're into advertising... Watch that show because it is just can level ideas, but that you would never probably be able to sell. But like the thinking is,
wait,
is
it's
there.
Called Nathan.
Nathan For You. So there was another one where it was a gas station, and they were like, "How do we get more people to come and buy our gas?" And he was like, "Advertise that your gas is like sold for like $1 a gallon or whatever." And then people came, and they're like, "Yeah." And it was like, "Wait a minute, the small print said." That you have to complete a challenge.
Oh my god!
No, it was a rebate. It was a rebate. You had to send in a rebate to get the money back. And they was like, okay, cool. And it's like, but you can only submit the rebate at a mailbox at the top of a mountain. And so,
amazing.
It's just like five people actually did it. But anyway, why the fuck did I bring this up?
That was the thing he wants to bring up.
Okay. So he made another show just recently that was on HBO a couple of weeks ago.
Okay,
and. The idea was that he was supposed to be helping people with like very small, normal, interpersonal relationships, that stuff that they were like afraid to do. And his way of helping people do that is that they would rehearse for any given situation. So let's say you wanted to break up with your girlfriend and you're like, this could go bad in so many ways. He's like, I will rehearse the situation with you so that we'll play through everything and you'll be ready for everything. But of course, he's a bit of an absurdist. And so... he would go through the nth levels of like, he would find a woman who looks like your girlfriend, and then he would send her secretly to like talk to your girlfriend to pick up your girlfriend's speech patterns, and it would just got very John Malkovich-y sort of very quickly. But the reason I brought that up is that towards the end of the show, mildish spoiler, he stops just rehearsing and starts sort of. Recreating the past to be like, when you broke up with your girlfriend and it went wrong, let's figure out why it went wrong. So I'm going to bring an actress in and we're going to redo it. And you're going to break up with your girlfriend again and again and again and again. And we'll see exactly where this went wrong.
Wow.
And a lot of people who had problems with the show were like, this is just stupid and this is weird. And like, you're in a reality that is a copy of a reality that's a copy of a reality. I don't know what the fuck is going on anymore. A lot of times those are ads that we make. That is like, it's a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy, and then you end up with a thing that no one connects with because it is so divorced from any experience that anyone has actually had. Again, none of us have ever walked our wives or girlfriends or boyfriends outside on Christmas morning and been like, I bought two cars. Which one do you want? That's a copy of a copy of a copy that looks cool, but you won't feel anything because you're like, dude, I don't know what that's not real.
No. It's Inception.
It's Inception, yeah. And it's like, we need to stop making Inception shit. Like, please stop making Inception shit. Like, focus. Like, I'd much rather you make something very, very, very insular about your knitting club in Cleveland, Ohio, and like what y'all do for Christmas than another fucking commercial where, ta-da, I bought you a puppy in a box. Have any of you ever given someone a puppy?
Yeah, it died in the box because of the, yeah, it was awful.
Fucked up. That's an ASPCA shit.
That was a turn. But pet insurance is what we were selling.
There we go.
Imagine that. Ray, I want to say thank you, man.
Yeah,
this has been by far some of the most enjoyable minutes I've spent on planet Earth. So thank you very much.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much.
Do you want to ask us anything before you leave? Or would you like to leave with your dignity intact?
Well, I'll leave with my dignity intact. I don't get that option often, so I'm going to take it this one time.
I want to say thank you so much. This has been incredible.
Thank you,
Ray.
Thank you both.